Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point.
I don't mind a good fight. For reasons known only to God, I've had quite a few tough ones in my life. But I learned an important lesson along the way. In the end, it matters less that you can fight. What you fight for is the real test.
That was the late Senator John McCain accepting the Republican nomination for president in 2008. The speech is worth remembering as we take this hour to remember McCain, because while it is full of the expected Mavericks take on issues such as taxes and health care, it's the last part of the address that will endure. McCain spoke powerfully about the transformation he underwent as a prisoner of war in Vietnam.
I fell in love with my country when I was a prisoner in someone else's. I loved it. Not just for the many comforts of life here. I loved it for its decency, for its faith, and the wisdom, justice, and goodness of its people. I loved it because it was not just a place, but an idea, a cause worth fighting for. I was never the same again. I wasn't my own man anymore. I was my country's.
This hour on Point, the life and legacy of Senator John McCain. Join us. How do you remember John McCain? What is his lasting mark on U.S. politics? Was McCain the last of his kind? Or can American politics today give us another politician who acts on his or her belief that the idea of America is bigger than any one individual? Join us at any time at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Well, joining me first from Moore, Oklahoma today is Republican Representative Tom Cole of Oklahoma. He worked with Senator McCain on defense issues and Native American issues. He also spoke in support of McCain's presidential candidacy at the 2008 Republican National Convention. Representative Cole, welcome to On Point, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me.
I'm, of course, sorry this has to be under these circumstances as remembering the passing of Senator McCain. But first of all, since we played those moments from the 2008 RNC, I mean, you were there. What was that moment like? What was it like seeing John McCain on stage giving that speech and giving us his view of America?
Oh, it was a magic moment. Obviously, it was the pinnacle of a lifetime for him. He'd fought for the nomination in 2000, hadn't succeeded, had come back literally from the political dead in the course of the 2008 campaign. People forget that, but he was down and out, literally down to traveling by himself with no aides because the campaign went broke early. He had to shake up his campaign team, and sort of come all the way back was a moment. And he actually left the convention leading in the polls, which, again, something people tend to forget. He was ahead in that race until we had the great economic collapse in late September, which sort of was the death knell for Republican prospects. But he fought a great campaign every inch of the way, and I was extraordinarily proud of him and very proud to be one of his many, many supporters.
Yeah, you know, it's really bracing to hear that tape where he says, "I was never the same again. I wasn't my own man anymore. I was my country's." I mean, what has America lost with the death of John McCain?
Oh, we've lost a great patriot for sure. We've lost a lion of the Senate. And I think we've lost someone who always spoke to our better angels. He was pugnacious and combative, but it was always with a purpose. And if you differed with him, and I certainly differed with him on a number of occasions, you never doubted his sincerity and his commitment to what he believed. And frankly, it never became so acrimonious that you couldn't the next day work on something together. So, he had that legislator's quality of being able to fight with you one day and cut a deal with you the next. And that's sadly all too rare these days.
Hmm. So, I mean, tell me a little bit about some of the times where the two of you didn't see eye to eye. What were those issues about, and how'd you handle them?
Well, we disagreed on campaign finance reform. That was actually before I was in Congress, but I was the chief of staff of the Republican National Committee. Committee, so we had an opportunity to discuss that in a pretty pointed way. Look, we would have we didn't ever have a chance to discuss it, but we would have disagreed very much on repeal and replace movement. And frankly, there were times when I thought the senator was very much a hawk, so am I, but I thought he was pretty aggressive in the use of military force. So there were occasions there, but I think of all the times we were on the same side, and that was most times, and that was true with most Republicans. Again, you can't be upset with somebody because they're arguing for principles they believe in, and many times a considerable political risk to themselves. John McCain certainly did that on the immigration issue, for instance, and he did it on others where he risked alienating his own side because he believed something bigger was at stake for the good of the country.
Yeah. So do you think that there's room in American politics today for the kind of politician that Senator McCain was? I mean, he did have that independent streak, and he did, butt heads not only with members across the aisle, but of course with members of his own party.
I do think there's that, and I think we would almost dishonor his legacy to suggest that there's not. He would never acknowledge that. I remember in the 2008 campaign, one of the things people forget, one of his greatest acts of bipartisanship was at the time of the economic crisis, coming back and working across the aisle with President Obama and with President Bush to pass the legislation that kept the Great Recession from becoming the Great Depression. He was bipartisan all the time. Now, at the same time, I think Barack Obama would tell you he was waging one heck of a campaign against him, and he fought every step of the way. Didn't give up to the last minute. That's just the way John McCain was. But there's always room for somebody that will take a principled stand, somebody that will lead rather than just follow blindly, and somebody that will, again, speak to the better part of who we are as a country. And I think John McCain learned that better part when he was in Hanoi. He never forgot it. He never forgot the bravery, the decency of the American people and their resilience, because he saw it firsthand with the people around him. He lived it himself in his own life.
Well, that's Congressman Tom Cole. He's a Republican representative for Oklahoma's 4th District. He worked closely with Senator McCain on issues of defense and Native American issues as well. Congressman Cole, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. It was a privilege to be with you.
All right. Well, let's turn now to Elaine Povich. She's a staff writer at Stateline, an initiative of the Pew Charitable Trust, and she's also author of John McCain, an American Maverick, and John McCain, a biography, a couple of biographies there about the late Senator McCain. Elaine Povich, welcome to you.
Hi, happy to be here.
So there's so much to discuss about the late senator's life. I'm just wondering, let me just start with a big question to you, one that I put to Representative Cole here. What has American politics lost with John McCain's death?
American politics has lost an independent voice. I think in this era where there is so much of capsulizing positions and staking out positions on one side or the other, or following the line of the party or the party leader, John McCain was an independent voice. Yes, he was a conservative Republican, and he believed in a strong defense, and he believed in a strong economy, but he also staked out positions that were not exactly, as Congressman Cole just talked about in campaign finance reform, that were not nearly what the party wanted. And of course, in his famous thumbs down on the repeal of the Affordable Care Act, he certainly staked out that position. He marched to a conscience and a thought process that was his own. And I think that is all too rare in American politics today.
So take us back to an earlier part of his life before he was in politics. You've written two biographies about him. Where did that independent streak come from?
Oh, he was a rebel. He was born into a Navy family. His father, his grandfather were both admirals. His future was ordained for him from the time he was born. And his response to that was to rebel against it, to be wild and crazy. And they called him McNasty at school because he got into fights and scrapes. And he drove fast cars and always had a woman on his arm and accumulated enough demerits, almost enough demerits, to get thrown out of the Naval Academy, but not quite. He never quite went over that edge. And that tells you something about him. So it was a tough legacy for him, and he wore it quite uncomfortably in the beginning. he eventually grew into that legacy, but circumstances and the whole POW experience led into his becoming who he is today, not following the footsteps of his father and grandfather, not becoming an admiral. His war wounds were too difficult for him to continue mm-hmm. as a fighter pilot, and that's what he wanted to do. But it shaped him totally from the very beginning.
Right. Now, you know, we obviously must talk about his experience in Vietnam because that, as you just said, it defines who John McCain is and the man that he became. But before we talk about his 5.5 years as a POW in Vietnam, another thing that had happened to him during that war, which doesn't often get as much attention, was what, in July of 1967, when he was on board the USS Forrestal, I believe?
Yes.
And there was a terrible accident there, and he almost died in that accident.
He was extremely lucky. He will tell you, I recently saw an old videotape in the aftermath of that horrific fire in which more than 100 sailors lost their lives. An interviewer asked him, "How did you survive?" And he said, "I have no idea." He jumped from his plane into the fire, rolled away, was wounded with some shrapnel, but relatively mild wounds, and he survived it. And the interesting thing is, at that point, they told him, "Well, you can go home now. You've been in this terrible accident. You can go back stateside." And he said, "No, I am in this war. I am in this fight. Assign me to another aircraft carrier." And they did. I believe it was the Oriskany, and that's where he continued to fly missions into North Vietnam.
Yeah. So what had happened on the Forrestal is that a missile from another jet was accidentally fired on the deck of the ship, right? And it hit his jet.
It did.
And caused a chain reaction of explosions on board. 134 men were killed that day in that disaster. But as you said, John McCain survived almost miraculously and then went on a couple of months later to crash and in Vietnam and begin a 5.5-year-old ordeal as a POW. We're going to talk about that when we come back. We're talking about the life and legacy of the late Senator John McCain. We're speaking with Elaine Povich. She's a staff writer at Stateline and author of two biographies of McCain, John McCain, an American Maverick, and John McCain, a biography. We want to hear from you. What do you think the legacy of the Maverick Arizona Senator is, and also the complexities of the America that he leaves behind? I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
This message comes from NPR's sponsor, Indeed. When it comes to hiring, you don't have time to waste. You need help getting to your short list of qualified candidates fast. With Indeed, post a job in minutes, set up screener questions, then zero in on qualified candidates. And when you need to hire fast, accelerate your results with sponsored jobs. New users can try for free when you sign up at Indeed.com/NPR podcast. Terms, conditions, and quality standards apply.
This is Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We do long-form interviews with the people behind the best books, pop culture, journalism, and more, so you can get to know the people whose work you love. You'll find Fresh Air on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about the life and legacy of the late Senator John McCain. You can join us. What do you think his legacy is? And do you think there's room in American politics today for a politician with the kind of independent streak that McCain had? And, you know, McCain would be the first to say that his legacy is complicated, warts and all. What are some of those warts and what can we learn from them? We're speaking with Elaine Povich. She's author of two biographies of John McCain, an American Maverick, and John McCain, a biography, released in 2009 and 2018. Those books came out. Now, before the break, we were talking about, we were just getting into the part of Senator McCain's life that really went on to define him, his nearly 5.5 years as a POW in Vietnam. So I want to play a little bit of tape here because in 1967, while in captivity, McCain was interviewed by a French journalist. Now, it was about at this time that the Vietnamese had discovered that John McCain's father and grandfather were admirals in the United States Navy. Now, McCain later said that the interview had been staged by the North Vietnamese. They'd put him in a big bed and it looked like he was in a nice room, but that he did the interview because he believed the French journalist would take a message back to his family. So listen to this part. It's at the end of the interview.
I would just like to tell my wife I will get well. I love her. I hope to see her soon.
Now, that excerpt of that interview is from the PBS Ken Burns documentary, The Vietnam War. The original video was released by the French National Archive in 2008. It has a French translation dubbed over parts of what McCain said, but you can hear at the end of the interview John McCain saying, "I'd appreciate if you tell her that. That's all I have." Elaine Povich, tell us more about this moment in John McCain's life. I mean, he had two broken arms, a shattered knee. He was horribly tortured. And as we know, when the North Vietnamese discovered that he was the son and grandson of an admiral, they offered him an early release, which he refused.
Indeed. It was two separate incidents, actually. That tape was made shortly after he was shot down. His wounds had not been treated. He was in terrible pain. And the North Vietnamese wanted him to create some kind of a propaganda film where he would talk about what great treatment he was getting. He refused to do that. And the French journalist, when the North Vietnamese kept pressing him to say, things are great, the French journalist, to his credit, said, "I think I have all I need for this interview," and ended it. So the message that McCain wanted to send to his family got out, and the propaganda did not. Later, when he was imprisoned and they said to him, "Because you were the admiral's son, we will offer you early release." Now, the code of POWs is that the first in is the first out, and no one takes their place in line. And McCain, of course, knew this better than anyone, and he refused to be let out ahead of time because he knew that that would be the prize propaganda pearl for the North Vietnamese, that they had given special treatment to the admiral's son, and see, your country doesn't care about you and they only care about themselves. That was just not John McCain. He was not going to get out early, so he refused. And you have to understand, what was going on in that prison camp was beyond horrific. What we know of the torture and the treatment is, I'm sure, only about half of what really went on there. Some of the things that were done to these men are too horrible to talk about in public. And they were offering him a way out. Mm. And you look at this young man, this brash fighter pilot who frankly cared more about himself than probably he would like to admit, and yet he didn't take the deal.
Yeah. I mean, he was tortured, basically almost starved, right? He was barely 100 pounds when he was finally released with his fellow POWs in 1973. He attempted suicide at least once or twice while there.
Yeah, twice. It was after they had forced a confession from him, you know, made up one of these confession things where he had to tape record something that, you know, was propaganda. And he was so distraught about the idea that he had broken, as they say, and that he had dishonored, he thought, the Navy and his fellow prisoners, that he thought about taking his own life not once but twice. Fortunately for all of us, he did not succeed.
Hmm. Well, he later said about that quote-unquote confession that, "I had learned what we all learned over there, that every man has his breaking point. I had reached mine."
Indeed.
I want to play another bit of tape here about Senator McCain much later on, reflecting about his experiences in Vietnam. This is actually from a 2017 interview with C-SPAN. And he talks about whether or not he looks at the Vietnamese today and blames them for what he experienced while in the quote-unquote Hanoi Hilton.
"I don't blame them. I don't blame them. We're in a war. I didn't like it, but at the same time, when you're in a war and you're captured by the enemy, you can't expect, to have tea."
Elaine Povich, you hear that, and my first question is, so how did he take that that understanding of his experience, he says, just as you just heard him, that he does not blame the Vietnamese for it. How did that inform how he viewed, you know, the rest of the world, America's role in it, and how, you know, he could affect that role?
It's a complicated question. The first thing you have to know is that he didn't blame the Vietnamese people, particularly the folks who were in charge long after the war was over. He and John Kerry led the fight to normalize relations with Vietnam. They provided President Bill Clinton, who had avoided service in Vietnam, enough political cover so that he could normalize relations. What a thing to go back to the country that had held him for 5.5 years and seek to bring them into the world of nations. And I think that says something very important about McCain's relationship with other countries in the world. He believed that the United States led the world of nations and that it was up to our country to set an example for democracy and how to work within the world. He made countless trips overseas to many, many countries. He knew their leaders by name. Members of the Senate and the House who went on congressional delegations always wanted to go with him because every time he went to a new country that they probably didn't know very much about, he was greeted as a hero. Here comes the American who knows about us, who understands our problems and can help us. And he spoke with them. He knew everything about the countries in the world. Mm. And he was fascinated about the United States and our place in that world.
Mm. We've got a lot of comments pouring in online here. Politics Watcher says on our website, McCain's saving grace was that he was capable of recognizing his mistakes and apologizing for them. This has become a vanishingly rare quality in today's politicians, but is absolutely essential if America is to persist. And Ian says, have shed many tears over the last 2 days for Senator McCain's passing. He touched so many lives deeply. However, I totally disagreed with Senator McCain's participation in Vietnam. Then adds the parenthetical, you can be sure he killed many innocent people. But the message I really respect that came from Senator McCain is for all of us to fight like hell for what we believe in, even if it is in direct opposition to his support for unnecessary wars, etc. Well, let's take a call here. David is calling from Boston, Massachusetts. You're on the air, David. Guess David is not on the air. Let's go to Nora, who's calling from Providence, Rhode Island. You're on the air, Nora.
Hi, I just wanted to say how, you know, I've been also shedding a lot of tears the past couple of days. I'm an independent, and Senator McCain appealed to me on so many different issues, and specifically his defense that, you know, he always defended our Constitution and First and Second Amendments and democracy here and abroad. He fought for freedom here and abroad, and especially stood with the Syrian people against the dictator that is Assad, and, you know, he kept a book of all the victims that Assad tortured on his desk and met with many Syrians in the past 7-8 years to kind of stand by us and to help us against this fight for our freedom. And that's something I don't know who's going to fill that void in the Senate today.
Mm. Nora, thank you so much for your call. Elaine Povich, your quick thought on that?
I think it's going to be very difficult to fill that void. I don't think anyone can really take his place. He was unique. He was an iconoclast. He was one of a kind. You can't fill that, really. And I don't think that anyone ought to try.
Hmm. Well, you know, Elaine, before we leave the Vietnam era here completely, our caller David, who hung up apparently right before I got to him, he actually was trying to – I think he was going to ask what I believe is an interesting question because you know, Vietnam, the war itself, of course, remains hugely controversial, complex, bloody, with lasting generational implications. And the caller was going to ask, I hope, you know, would John McCain have become the public figure that he did had it not been for his experience there, that it was the war that made him?
I think in large measure that's true. It was his experience. You know, when he found that he was no longer going to serve in the Navy, he still had this overarching belief in service. So where do you take that? And I think the most likely and the most logical place to take service to country is in the political arena. And because of Vietnam, he had a compelling story to tell, which made him an attractive candidate. So everything dovetailed to make that service continue in the political arena.
Well, Elaine Povich, stand by for just a second, because I want to bring in another voice into this conversation from Arizona, Amy Silverman. She's joining us from Phoenix. She's an Arizona-based journalist, editor, and writer for the Phoenix New Times. She's been doing that for 25 years. We have a link to her story, Vintage John McCain, Dead at 81. He was America's senator, not Arizona's. That link is at our website, onpointradio.org. Amy Silverman, welcome to you.
Hi, Magna.
So, I mean, Senator McCain obviously has he's a complicated man. And, you know, as we remember him and lionize him, we can't ignore those complexities, right? And you write about some of them in your essay and obituary of the senator. So, first of all, let me just ask you, like, how is he being viewed in Arizona today?
Oh, I think very favorably. I mean, it's a very sad occasion. He passed away. He served Arizona for many decades. And this is a place that is often maligned. Remember, we're most famous for Joe Arpaio, our former toughest sheriff in America. And so I think that people in Arizona really love, in large part, the fact that McCain served them and that he's viewed so widely as a hero. But I also think that there are people who've been around for a long time watching Arizona politics who are a little bit more interested in the shades of gray than the blacks and whites.
Okay, so tell us a bit about some of those grays. I mean, you write about how that there was a moment where regarding a governor of Arizona, which perhaps doesn't put the senator in the most favorable light.
Rose Mofford, yeah, she was briefly governor of Arizona, and she was testifying before a Senate committee, and it was pretty obvious to all who were there, particularly Governor Mofford, that the senator was repeatedly asking her questions when he knew she didn't know the answers and mocking her.
I mean, she'd only been governor for 8 days at that point in time.
We should know. And unfortunately, that was not unheard of. He was scrappy. He had a sense of humor. His nickname McNasty followed him in politics to some extent. And I hate to use the expression, he took no prisoners, but that's what comes to mind. He really let you know what he thought of you. And in a lot of ways, that's a great thing in American politics. And certainly something we want to see, and certainly something that he's been lauded for. But there are a lot of people who felt like he was a little bit hypocritical. For example, he was such an incredible champion of campaign finance reform. People thought that was so wonderful. But if you look at Arizona political history, it wasn't that long before he became a champion of campaign finance reform that he was one of the Keating Five.
Right.
And a lot of people felt like he was just trying to rehabilitate his image. And he did amass a tremendous war chest at the same time he was fighting for campaign finance. Now, you could argue that he had to. He had to do that to stay in power, and that's true. But the perspective from Arizona often, because he was viewed by some as a carpetbagger who came here to make his political career, was that he was simply using Arizona as a platform for national politics and didn't care as much about the state.
Yeah, Amy, hang on here.
As others.
I want to get Elaine Povich's view on this, because we should talk a little bit about the Keating Five, right? When it was in 1989, Senator McCain was one of five senators who, in this ethics scandal, had taken favors from banker Charles Keating, right? And in return had interceded or attempted to intercede with federal regulators on behalf of Keating. I mean, this was a mark on Senator McCain, Elaine.
Absolutely. He felt at that time, he said afterwards, that it was probably the lowest point he'd ever reached in politics. It was bad. It was the old boy, I'm going to help you, you help me, you give me money, I fix your regulations. It was everything you hate about money in politics. And after that, after he was chastised for having bad judgment in the Senate, he really felt, I think, that he had to do something. It wasn't so much that he was trying to make up for the bad things that he did by doing campaign finance reform. He knew in his own self how it had affected his judgment, his behavior, and he felt like he had to do something to try to prevent this from happening.
I mean, just to jump in here with some more details,
yeah,
for those who don't remember, I mean, 1989 was quite a while ago for some of us. I mean, Charles Keating went to jail, right? And the scandal cost the government, several billion billions of in government and investors billions of dollars. There was an ethics investigation, but the Keating Five were cleared of wrongdoing. They were just rebuked for those lapses. So, I mean, are you saying that, I think Amy Silverman was pointing to that perhaps some might look at John McCain, the later champion of campaign finance reform, as a cynical attempt for him to sort of rehabilitate his image. But you're saying it wasn't so cynical?
You can look at it that way, and I understand, particularly in Arizona, why it would be looked at that way. John McCain once told me that being chastised for the Keating Five was worse than being tortured. I found that incredible, and yet I saw that in his face, that the shame that went through that. You know, he's all about honor, and he did a terribly dishonorable thing. So I think when you look at the entirety of the man, what he was attempting to do was to see that those kinds of dishonorable acts would not be as easy to do as he was found.
Yeah. Amy Silverman, we're going to be heading into a break here, but I just want to give you 20 seconds to respond to what you've heard Elaine just say.
Well, I think it's too soon to get too critical. The one thing that I would say is that I think that what McCain did in 2008 by making Sarah Palin his running mate says to me more than just about anything about the kind of politician he was.
Yeah, well, Amy, I'm glad you brought up that point, because we're going to really take a close look at that when we come back. Amy Silverman, Arizona-based journalist, former editor for the Phoenix New Times. We have a link to her story, Vintage John McCain, Dead at 81. He was America's senator, not Arizona's. She joined us today from Phoenix. Amy, thank you so very much.
Thank you.
We are talking about the life and complex legacy of the late Senator John McCain. We'll hear a lot more from listeners when we come back, and also talk about that Sarah Palin pick and what impact that had on American politics. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
I'm Linda Holmes. There's more stuff to watch these days than you can ever get to. That's why we make Pop Culture Happy Hour. Twice a week, we give you the lowdown on what's worth your time and what's not. Find Pop Culture Happy Hour on the NPR One app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about the life and legacy of Arizona Republican Senator John McCain. He served 6 terms as senator from Arizona leaves behind a complex life, a complex legacy, and really a lot of questions about whether or not American politics has room now, given the divisive nature of American politics, for a politician like John McCain was. We're joined by Elaine Povich. She's a staff writer at Stateline. She's written 2 biographies of Senator McCain. And joining us now, in addition to Elaine, is McKay Coppins, staff writer for The Atlantic and author of The Wilderness, a book about the battle over the Republican Party. McKay Coppins, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks for having me.
So, McKay, before we get to you, before the break, we had just started talking about the 2008 presidential race and John McCain's selection of Sarah Palin as his running mate, and what that says about, you know, the kind of politician he was and the kind of America that perhaps that campaign helped usher us toward. So I want to play a couple of pieces of tape here, because there's a moment from that campaign that so many people remember as one of McCain's finest. It was in Lakeville, Minnesota, in October of 2008 at a town hall meeting. And Senator McCain took a question from a woman who said that she was very worried about then-Senator Barack Obama, that she couldn't trust him. And here's what she said.
I have read about him, and he's an Arab. No?
No, ma'am. He's a decent family man, citizen that I just happen to have disagreements with on fundamental issues, and that's what this campaign is all about.
Now, many people say that was one of Senator McCain's finest moments. Many Arab Americans, I should note, took issue with that, saying that, of course, the Arab issue wasn't really a problem. All Arab Americans can be fine, decent family people, too, as well. But my point in playing that tape is that in that same town hall meeting, there were several other moments where reporters said that people in the town hall were shouting out that that Obama was a terrorist, that he was a liar, that he couldn't be trusted, and that in fact it was perhaps John McCain's own campaign that had helped fan those flames. I mean, listen to this moment, again, from the same town hall where McCain had to push back against against those accusations against Obama, telling the audience repeatedly there was no need to fear him.
He is a decent person and a person that you do not have to be scared as President of the United States. Now, I if I didn't think I wouldn't be one heck of a lot better president, I wouldn't be running, okay? And that's the point. That's the point.
All right, McKay Coppins, let's talk about this for a second here, because it was Sarah Palin herself, right, that in many McCain-Palin events, you know, was, for example, disparaging and exaggerating some links between Obama and William Ayers, who was a domestic terrorist during the Vietnam War era. And audience members during Palin's speeches were often heard yelling, quote, kill him or treason or terrorist. I mean, it was the McCain campaign that gave her a national stage.
Well, this is one of the strange things about that campaign, right? Where you had this ticket, John McCain and Sarah Palin, advancing very different messages about Barack Obama. On the one hand, you had John McCain kind of consistently making the case that Barack Obama is wrong on this issue and that issue, and I disagree with him fundamentally, but he's a good person and he's nothing to be scared about. He's not this kind of fever dream caricature that you might have seen in conservative media. On the other hand, you had Sarah Palin very deliberately advancing that caricature of him, you know, talking about how he palled around with terrorists and you know, kind of casting him as this person who is fundamentally un-American. Now, the question is, or at least one question is, how deliberate was that strategy, right? Because you look at a lot of presidential campaigns, often the basic strategy is, this is, you know, presidential campaigning 101. The guy at the top of the ticket, the person at the top of the ticket, is supposed to be more statesmanlike and more presidential and stay above the fray to the extent that they can, whereas the running mate is supposed to be the attack dog, right? So the question is, was that a deliberate strategy, or was it a situation, and I think that there's some cause to believe this, where John McCain didn't quite realize what he was doing, what he was empowering when he put Sarah Palin on the ticket?
Yeah, so let me just jump in here, because, I mean, perhaps at that time it was impossible to know what kind of sort of vitriolic rhetoric she would put out there on this giant national platform. But what I'm wondering is, in his memoir this year, The Restless Wave, right? I mean, McCain wrote that he did regret choosing Palin, mm-hmm. But mostly because he really wanted Joe Lieberman as his first choice. And but he still defends her performance, though. He said, you know, she stumbled in some interviews and had a few misjudgments in the glare of the ceaseless spotlight and unblinking cameras. She didn't put herself on the ticket. I did. I made mistakes and misjudgments, too. What strikes me about this, though, is that, you know, in 2018, he didn't write in his memoir specifically, I regret putting her on there because she perhaps gave entree on a national stage to mm-hmm. the kind of vitriolic, divisive rhetoric now that he spent the last 2.5 years pushing back against with President Trump.
You know, I've spoken to people who worked on that campaign and were very close to John McCain, and they say that he continued to harbor a lot of guilt after that election, not necessarily for empowering the kind of right-wing, you know, fever swamp forces that we would later see come to power in 2016, but for specifically putting Sarah Palin in that situation. She was clearly in the minds of a lot of people on that campaign and in John McCain's mind, not ready for prime time. They plucked her out of a governorship where she had only been in office a very short time, had not spent any time on the national stage, and put her right at the red hot center of American politics. And she and John McCain, I'm told by people who are close to him, always felt responsible to some degree for putting her in that situation before she was ready, and for her becoming what she became.
Well,
so I think that's a little bit of why you're seeing him still try to kind of defend her performance on the campaign trail.
I see. Well, Ilhan Povich, though, in October of 2016, Barack Obama said, quote, this was an interview in New York Magazine, I should say, that Obama said, quote, I see a straight line from the announcement of Sarah Palin as the vice presidential nominee to what we see today in Donald Trump and the shift in the center of gravity for the Republican Party.
I think that he may see a straight line, but I think it's actually much more of a circuitous route. I would not give Sarah Palin credit or blame for the vast majority of this. I think the underlying reasons for it were there before her. She may have fanned the flames some, but I think it's an exaggeration to say that there's a straight line between her. The choice of Sarah Palin was a very complicated one. Yes, he wanted Lieberman. The party people talked him out of it. They said there'll be a rebellion. He wanted to shake up the race. He was quite certain that Barack Obama was the new flavor of the month, and he had to do something to make himself, you know, an old white guy, and he'll tell you that, look a little different and a little more hip. He always liked being around strong, sassy women. His mom's 106, and he learned a lot from her, so I think he was quite smitten with Sarah Palin and regretful that it turned out she didn't know anything. One of the things that Senator McCain admired more than anything else was intellect, and she was deficient in that, and she resorted to what she knew best, which was red meat, and it did what it was supposed to do in some quarters, but it led to unanticipated consequences in others.
Yeah. Well, let's get a bunch of calls in here, if I can. Derek is calling from Newport, Vermont. You're on the air, Derek.
Hi.
What's your thought, Derek?
Oh, my comment was about that particular campaign stop. 2008 was the first election that I ever voted in. I'm a registered independent, and it was kind of a scary election in many ways. But that comment defending Obama really showed him as a man of integrity. And regardless of his choice of Sarah Palin, I thought that was really refreshing, especially among the GOP. And it's not something that you see at all really today. I meet people all the time who still, you know, bring up the birther argument and things like that. And it's really nice to see somebody at that level of the GOP say something like that. Mm.
Derek, thank you so much for your call. Let's go to Mike, who's calling from West Palm Beach, Florida. You're on the air, Mike.
Hi, Magna. I just wanted to say that you're the best host that this show has ever had. I wanted to mention that first.
I am humbled, but we've got... let's talk about John McCain, though.
All right, yeah. Not to throw off the spotlight in this conversation, but to draw out just an interesting idea. Donald Trump has used direct diplomacy with North Korea, used executive power to strengthen our steel and aluminum industries. He advocates for a strong relationship with Russia. These used to be traditional democratic platforms, and he has received absolute scorn. In John McCain's two presidential election runs, he was accused of sexual misconduct, corruption in office. He apparently had an illegitimate child, and he was declared mentally unfit for office by major media outlets. Now, for some reason, we believe that it's virtuous only in death to stand for what you believe in. Up until that point, expect to be attacked from all sides.
Mike, I don't get what you're talking about here, because a lot of what you're talking about sounds like it comes from that really ugly South Carolina primary in 2000 against George W. Bush, where there was a lot of mud slung by both sides. Oh, it looks like Mike has hung up, so not quite sure what he's talking about there. So let's just turn back to McKay, Coppins, and Elaine Povich here and talk about John McCain, the senator, and what his passing means for the future of the Senate. I want to play a little bit of tape here. This is from July 25th, 2017. Now, this is before the Senate took its vote on the GOP plan to repeal the Affordable Care Act. This was just after he had put forth his vote to for the motion to proceed so that debate could be allowed over the bill. He had voted for that, but then he gave this very impassioned speech where he was calling for the Senate to return to order, as he said, to compromise and reach across the aisle and find, in his words, imperfect solutions that would anger extreme partisans but get the country better to get the country closer to better outcomes.
What have we to lose by trying to work together to find those solutions? We're not getting done much apart. I don't think any of us feels very proud of our incapacity. Merely preventing your political opponents from doing what they want isn't the most inspiring work. There's greater satisfaction in respecting our differences, but not letting them prevent agreements that don't require abandonment of core principles, agreements made in good faith that help improve lives and protect the American people. The Senate is capable of that.
McKay Coppins, what does it mean for the Senate now that John McCain isn't there?
Yeah, well, excuse me. John McCain, in a lot of ways, was one of the last members of the Senate who still stood for the kind of old traditions of decorum and regular order and, you know, bipartisanship that what was supposed to be the greatest deliberative body was designed to do, right? The whole idea of the Senate from the Founding Fathers was that this would be a place where, you know, elder statesmen and veteran lawmakers would come together and reach consensus through a series of compromises and deal making and great debate and deliberation. And what the Senate has turned into over the last two decades really is an arena for conflict and drama and partisan theatrics. And you've seen this, especially, I think, during the Obama era, when a lot of the Tea Party senators like Ted Cruz and Mike Lee came into office. They didn't really approach the Senate as a place for deliberation and consensus reaching. They approached it as a stage of performance. And I think that the more we lose people like John McCain, and really when I say people like John McCain, there are only a handful left in either party, the less and less the Senate becomes a place where lawmakers are there to legislate as opposed to perform and get reelected.
Hmm. Now, he also had the chairmanship of the Senate Armed Services Committee. And so that passes to another senator here, Senator Inhofe, I believe. Is that right? I'm getting my might be getting my committees confused here. I'll double check on that in a second. Yeah, it does pass to Senator Inhofe. So, I mean, is Senator Inhofe likely to be more in line with what the Trump administration seeks from armed services than McCain was?
Inhofe is seen as more partisan, more of a party line supporter. He has called out Donald Trump in the past, especially on matters of foreign policy like North Korea. So it's possible that we'll see Inhofe push back and take a more independent approach. I doubt he will be as independent as John McCain has been. And I think it's a safe bet to say that he'll be a little bit more cooperative with the Trump administration.
Hmm. Elaine Povich, you know, obviously Senator McCain had many differences with President Donald Trump specifically. Now that Senator McCain is no longer there as an active voice, giving his view of his personal view of the president and how the president is shaping both America and America's place in the world, how much do you think that matters that voice isn't there?
I think it matters a lot. I mean, take for an example, to go back to the Senate cooperation for just really fast a second, Senator McCain was part of the Gang of Eight that came up with a compromise bipartisan immigration reform bill. It had security, the border wall. It had a path to citizenship. It was good for Arizona, he thought, because of the number of Hispanic immigrants there. It passed the Senate. It went over to the House, which has become even more polarized than the Senate, and it died. Without McCain there, I don't think the Senate passes that bill. And look where we are today. The immigration fight is a mess. It's political. It's nasty. It's got people on the borders and children separated from parents. I don't know that Senator McCain's compromise would have solved all of that. But he would have at least taken a step in the right direction. Mm. You don't find that now. It's gone. And I think the kind of things that he criticized the president for are also not going to be as easy to find.
Yeah. Well, Elaine Povich, staff writer at Stateline and author of two biographies of John McCain, thank you so much for joining us today.
Happy to be here.
And McKay Coppin, staff writer for The Atlantic and author of The Wilderness, a book about the battle over the Republican Party, thank you so much as well.
Thank you.
And listeners, I thank you for joining us today. I'm going to end with a comment from John, who calls himself John in Amherst. McCain was a conservative, he says, but I am not. But I have great admiration for his sense of decorum and his willingness to admit he was wrong, to take stands on his principles while remaining civil and respectful and willing to compromise for the common good. Send your comments to us at onpointradio.org or on Facebook and Twitter at onpointradio. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.